and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. This podcast is brought to you by Texas Citizens Bank. Through good and tough times, you need a bank that will stand by you. Texas Citizens Bank gives Houston small and medium-sized businesses the resources they need to thrive. As one customer says, a huge thank you to our friends at Texas Citizens Bank. Great customer service and down-to-earth good people. Call 713-948-5700 to learn more today. My guest for this episode is Will Womble, CEO of Houston-based software solution startup Umbridge. Will, who took a winding road to startup life, shares his story of how he got to where he is today and the unique service Umbridge provides. Will and I will also discuss the growing Houston innovation ecosystem, something Will is passionate about supporting, and the work that still needs to be done in the digital boomtown that is Houston. Will, thanks so much for joining me today.
Natalie, thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to this ever since I saw it on the calendar and our paths crossed a while ago and seeing what you're doing here. It is an absolute pleasure and appreciate you taking the time. Allow me to come on. This is fantastic and really excited to talk about Houston and all the things that are going on.
Absolutely. I mean, our paths crossed a while ago before your role that you're doing now existed. So we have some catching up to do. So I'm excited to get started. So for our listeners' purposes, can you give us an overview of your background and your career and how you got to where you are today?
Absolutely. It's a circuitous route that got me here that is not too uncommon to some of the routes we have when we're building software and understanding user journeys and getting inside the shoes of a particular persona that we're trying to digitally solve for. Born and raised here in Houston, my whole life, apart from once I graduated law school, but graduated high school here, went up to Dallas to SMU, held a clipboard for a couple years on the sideline, and then was lucky enough to get into law school right out of college, came back down to Houston and went to law school. And then the first kind of pivot in my story occurred. I went out to LA for 6.5 years, having gotten a very, very, very small role in the movie Pearl Harbor here in Houston that opened up some doors out in LA, mainly playing a lawyer on TV, much to the chagrin of my family. But did that. I met some really awesome people out there and friends. My wife and I were newly married. Never took the bar. Came back, took the bar 6.5 years out of law school. I think that's when my parents finally realized maybe I just wasn't applying myself and I did have a brain inside my head because they didn't think I was going to pass, and nor did I. Practice law as a DA here in Harris County, one of the best jobs ever. And I think it's one of the greatest training grounds, no matter what you do. And you get to serve your community. And then my dad's a lawyer and I practiced law with him for a few years on the civil side before I caught back up to a couple of those buddies from LA. There's two guys that I met when I was out there in the industry as well. They had joined a company called Chaotic Moon, which was an Austin-based technology-focused company, started in 2010, that was really focused, if you recall back to those times, you know, iPad had just come out. I think the iPad 2 hadn't even come out yet. Apple Store just come out, but they were doing a lot of mobile games, a lot of what your traditional kind of technology companies were doing back then. But Chaotic started to pivot towards the enterprise, and they were able to procure some business here in Houston. And one of the guys that I was really stayed friends with came back to Houston, kind of, you know, thought, hey, you would probably be a good fit here to help us drive some conversations, some rooms. You're comfortable getting in uncomfortable situations and being, you know, in front of people. So I joined Chaotic Moon in the spring of 2015, in about 6 months as the only Houston employee. And there was about 150, 170 employees at that time. And that summer we got acquired by Accenture. All those are kind of preludes to Umbridge, but rolled in and helped integrate Chaotic, mainly driving the go-to-market stuff for energy. At that particular time, Accenture was making a big play on the digital, as were a lot of the consultancies. And they wanted to really lean hard into some of the capabilities that were there. Met a lot of amazing people, many of whom I'm lucky enough to be able to work with today. And then started another company with two of those guys called Hypergiant on the AI side in a few years after that, still alive and cooking, but really, and that was another Austin-based entity, which is how we crossed when you were coming to South by Southwest. And I was making the weekly trip down 71 to Austin with the goal of really wanting to open something up here in Houston. And finally got that chance once a pivot was made and that particular company wanted to spend some time up in the upper atmosphere. And I thought, no, let's stay here. And came back to Houston from a business focus and was lucky enough to meet some pretty influential people on the investment side where I really pitched a thesis on what I thought could be done in Houston. And so in the spring, or excuse me, in the fall, winter of 2019, December to be exact, Umbridge got started with six of us. I know that was a long, big, wide swath, and I'll double tap on it, but I'll try to bring everything back, but relationships have driven my career, my life, and it's what's driving Umbridge right now. And I love to look back through the lens of perspective to see how the thread has been woven in and around it to really help lift up me individually, but more importantly, those around me and by chance as well, Umbridge.
Yeah, I think a lot of startup founders can relate to like the circuitous path to into the startup world. You really had a whole wild path to where you are today. So I think that's pretty fascinating, but
I didn't plan for this either, Natalie, but like, so, you know, my dad is a very successful trial lawyer and that was a real tough pivot, but I have to, so my sister-in-law, my brother's wife sent me this message today, cause it's so true. She sent this meme to me on via text and it said, "Hey, I got an idea, a podcast where parents try to explain what their adult children do for a living." And I was like, you know what? That actually might fly because that could be pretty entertaining. And I would throw my dad up for episode one.
That'd be so great. Okay, well, let's first zoom in on Umbridge specifically. You know, what is the company's kind of purpose? What made you? What makes what you're doing different from what's out there already?
We much like the circuitous route, you know, we've called ourselves a bunch of different things. And I've said this before on various other talks, we're services based and we get confused, understandably, as though we're trying to build a consultancy. And while there's a lot of strategic aspect to what we do in helping what we call teach to fish and making sure when we're building the solutions that clients can run on their own, it's not the end all be all. And if you go to our website or you look at some of t-shirts or, you know, logo, we're very, very big on the aesthetics and design, both on the UI side, but on the UX side. And so in addition to kind of getting confused as a consultancy, we often think, are you just doing design? We call ourselves a product shop. We're a digital product studio, technology mercenaries, if you will. And we will get hired to either come in and overhaul an existing product that may be needing a more contemporary stack on the front end, back end, or needing a better user experience. And we are people-based and entity-focused. At the end of the day, you'll see on the website and other taglines, we're really about delivering software solutions. We're very, very focused on the process that we follow and getting to the solution and giving that solution away. We're not in the IP business. Our product is our people, but we're in the product business because that's what we build. At the end of the day, we are writing code and shipping product out the door in unison with the clients we're lucky enough to work with in the same sandbox as we build, to carry my analogy forward, whatever sandcastle we're working on. The differentiation or what makes us different, speed to market. We're all on shore. We're all Houston based with the exception of, I think, 5 out of the 48 FTEs. Three out of those. And then we have 2 contractors that work for us full time and just want to be contractors on the West Coast. Houston was our focus and mission. And, you know, much to what, you know, you guys are doing, what you specifically are doing, Natalie, and really trying to shine a light. People see these emails from me on inside, and I'll come back to that, but like to your question, but I call Houston when I'm referring to, where I'm going, or I'll be in the, office. I call it Boomtown. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's a boom happening, as you well know, much like, Houston used to be called the Boomtown back in the 70s, 80s when people were wildcatting. And I think there's an interesting digital boom that's happening. And we were lucky enough to be at kind of the right place at the right time when some folks gave us a little bit of cash to seed us and get started on hiring some key folks. We were blessed to start in December of 19 and somehow find a way to grow through the pandemic, which still kind of pinches ourselves. But we break the company down into four kind of categories, or what we call crafts. And that is on product management, design, UX, UI, development, and DevOps. And before taking a pause to answer your question, to allow you to ask another question or follow up, the big differentiation is our focus on DevOps. And what we have seen when we ask clients, what's your DevOps environment like? How's that MVP that you were, instrumental in going to get? How's it scaling? And more so than AI or any of the fancy intelligence trying to be infused, it's a lot of the lack of ability for clients and enterprise to deploy the product or the MVP where they have a lot of pain point. And so we're big and a large focus of our projects is helping set up and get the operations set up, but also the DevOps environment for the products we're building correct so that they can scale. And I'm happy to go into some examples, but that's a large, long answer to kind of who we are and a little bit of the differentiation, but I'm happy to kind of get into further based on some of the follow-up stuff you got.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think what's really helpful is to talk in some amount of specifics for what you actually do. Cause I imagine you work on a wide range of types of software. And with types of clients from startups to larger clients. So when you're working with startups, for instance, I'm sure they have a set of challenges. And then when you're working with larger corporate clients, they have a different set of challenges. So how do you help, your diversity of clients navigate their specific challenges? And I'd love to hear some examples on some of the types of technology you worked on too, because that really paints a picture, I feel.
Yeah, no, it's a great question because one of the reasons as we got started that we were able to kind of come out of the chute with some momentum is because, and I get a chance to talk to some other founders and entrepreneurs when deciding between, investment teams to go with. And the one that we had has really taught me a huge lesson on relationships because of some of the portfolio companies we were able to get walked into because of who we were yoked with from an investment standpoint. I tell founders, the money number is great, but are they able to help on the relationship side, which is really going to help sustain? And I tell you that because we got started with a startup right out of the gate, and it was a digital fracking company out of Calgary. They already had a product out in market that was deployed to a small number of well pads. And what this company is named Cold Bore had done was they had frac trees down on the, they're on the completion side of drilling. So they had these hardware frac trees that had sensors embedded into them that were put down hole, and they were aggregating through these sensors the various amounts of third-party service data from coil, wireline, frac coming into the operator so as to help educate and visualize to the operator, where's my non-productive time coming from? And it was really an interesting product that had kind of not been fully thought through from a technological standpoint, but thought through from a driller's standpoint, because that's who this particular founder was. And like I said, it had been deployed, and we were brought in initially just to redesign the front end, just the front end aspect. It was a web-based application for the operator there on site. And that really goes to the heart of kind of who we are, how we engage. We don't come in trying to boil the ocean. We'll stair step, and take little bite-sized chunks. And we got in and did an overhaul of their design on the UX UI and how people are thinking from which particular user is engaging in this particular solution. And then that led to, we did the front end dev that then led into an overhaul of the back end. And one of the things that I've realized in talking and having done some of the smaller companies and startups is the, I don't say lack of knowledge, but the contemporary stacks that are out there, the up and coming stuff, is a common thread of not having the right folks that fully understand or appreciate what's kind of coming out there to that of the enterprise. And I'll come back to that in a second. But we were able to come in, do the front end design, back end, and then get to the edge. They were using some edge servers to do some real time data processing. That wasn't really real time, and that goes back to the DevOps component. We overhauled their DevOps that reduced their latency by a significant margin. At the same time, we weren't just building the product in our own environment or over a fence. That particular client had a decent sized team that was working side by side with us, mirroring the way in which we designed, we devved, we deployed. To the point where a year and a half after working with them, we've now fully extracted out. So I use the word DevOps as a double entendre, because it's great to have the DevOps environment in place, but operationally you better be set up to dev. And what we say is a byproduct of us building product is teaching clients how to sustain and maintain what it was we were able to deploy together. That's cold bore on the digital frack. We were excited for them. They just closed a very significant round of funding that was announced last week. And they're no longer just on 3 well pads. They're on, I think, close to 20 at this point, with some pretty significant logos that they're doing business with. And it's awesome to be able to say we were a part of helping them take that initial product and get it to a point where they can actually scale it. And have been an instrumental part in allowing them to grow. Mm-hmm. To converse that or answer your question on the larger enterprise side, we are working with a very large, violating certain things? I'll talk about Sumitomo in a bit, or maybe for a different example or a different answer. This particular client is a very large EMP on the they're a Dutch EMP that have a very large play on the downstream and have an on-demand mobile fueling platform that they're wanting to deploy out of the States. It was a solution that was being prototyped, tested over in the UK. And the whole concept being, hey, I want fuel delivered to where my car is parked or where my fleet is parked. What does the experience look like for the internal person inside this company, for the person driving a retrofitted truck that has this particular fuel or charging capability, as this entity is looking to the future from a renewables perspective? And then what does it look like for an end consumer like ourselves or some type of fleet manager on the B2B side? And we are working with this particular entity's team here in Houston to build the native version, a scalable version that will be deployed out later this year, early 2022, with thoughts of rolling out even further after that. The big difference between working with large publicly traded entities such as that one and the smaller startups, obviously it's probably too simple to say, but the enterprise is still trying to figure out where the difference between IT and business sit. And really it should be digital or team. And so a lot of on the second example I was talking about, we're getting pushback from one or the other when really at the end of the day, what's right for the product. And that's the lens through which we're always looking, what's right for the product. Take the whatever camp you're coming from out of it that you'd think would go away on the smaller side for the cold bores. It's still there to a certain extent as we shift, we as a community, we as enterprise and people who are building digital products, shift into that what we call product-minded first mentality and really putting that lens before everything else. Those are two examples on the smaller side, quote unquote, startup, although they're a very, very large startup. And then some of the larger, more enterprisey stuff that we're able to work on.
No, that's great. And it seems like the focus of what you specifically have to target is creating a technology that, you know, or it seems like the clients need too, is this technology that, you know, is cutting edge. And as you know, so the software industry has constantly got new specialties and new focuses. And so that's a huge benefit, but also providing a technology that's scalable to keep up with the growth or growing its use even. So that's really interesting. I wonder if that's something you've noticed as a common point between clients, is just this need to have the cutting edge type of software developed.
Yeah. You know, being open to what's the right solution or what's the right play, if I can say it that way, for what we're trying to accomplish versus my boss's boss just bought this suite of particular whatever. We really need to figure out how to wrangle what was bought into the solution we're trying to come up with. And the old proverbial hammer and then seeing everything as the nail that you're trying to go hit is still a common thing, understandably so, that we get pulled into quite a bit. And as a services focused and bent entity, you know, we have to be agnostic to whatever the latest cutting edge technology of the client we're working with, whatever that's been chosen. You know, we have opinions on what technology and what position should be, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of similarities to the big boys and girls out there that are playing around in these spaces that, okay, we call them constraints. What are the constraints, client, that we need to work around when building this particular solution? Don't let the fact that we've got to integrate into that at a later time get in front of how we innovate to whomever we're trying to build this product for. Starting to get that more and more because technology, even in the last handful of years, has just thrown itself forward from a capability and a computational standpoint that there's not a lot of corners that you're going to get backed into when thought through correctly. No matter who chose what on the front end of a boss's boss that was there a year ago, and now we're trying to figure out how to build whatever plane or vehicle we need to in order to push our solution through it. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a relatable sentiment to most people listening of technology, working in technology, especially software, is just this constant game of catch up and what's the latest. And very impressive. I do not have to navigate that personally, so I'm impressed by.
Well, no, but you see, it's also interesting because I will not throw anyone under the bus, but we get called into a lot of, and we ask about a lot of. Technology choices that may have been done a while ago. And we try to stay up on top of what's being used right now. And there's a lot of on the front end, on the back end, what's the next thing, if you will, that's going to be deployed. We want that because that's where the industry is going. But what the enterprise is starting to learn, that's where the talent is going. And so while your system may have been built on insert antiquated system here, you know, that's great, but not only do you have a grain of the industry from a domain perspective, and an industry being oil and gas technology in general, but you also have it from a language perspective in that, you know, trying to recruit the people you need, but then also have the technology that she or he can work on is pretty key to meet those two axes in order to kind of continue the cutting edge solutions you're wanting to go build? Because it's something that we continue to come into of some really, really, and it's not shade. It's just, it is what it is. Some old school stuff that it would be hard actually to find the talent internally to or externally to hire on to continue to innovate on top of.
Speaking of constantly evolving, I do want to talk to you about Houston as an innovation hub, as a place for software in general. Just to kind of start, you mentioned your passion for Houston and the fact that Umbridge has a loyalty to the city as well. I almost just want to ask why. What about Houston? It'll probably be a fun question for you to answer, but what about Houston makes for a great opportunity for Umbridge?
Well, it's centrally located. It's so funny because, again, and I'm totally biased, okay, full stop. But it's always third in line when it comes to the cool kid in Texas, to Austin and Dallas. And then, Houston, it's that muggy place down by Galveston. And it's really kind of interesting. It's not the first choice for a lot of people. And I get that. But when you look at it from a what's here, I don't think there's another city outside of New York that has more Fortune 500 companies here than Houston. But having spent time in two similarly focused from a services perspective startups that were both based in Austin, mm-hmm. I just had maybe, I don't know what you want to call it, stubbornness. I just wanted to go prove that Houston has some really talented software designers, talented software developers, clamoring for an opportunity to show the talent. I love Austin. I love Dallas. I went to school in Dallas. Lucky enough, family has a lake house in Austin. But I really believed that a void existed from a relationally deep contacts on the services side in order for someone to come in and build a high-end, nimble team that could solve at the level that the big folks are with a price point that isn't so hard to chew when it comes to building digital products. There's a lot of other places out there. There's a lot of really great entities here in Houston that are doing similar stuff that we are. And I just believe that there was space for someone else to come in with the delivery model that I knew we had and we could cultivate. And it was just kind of ripe. And then everything else was, I want to show Austin and Dallas that, the Oiler town, love you blue, still has a little boom left in that town.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I completely get the stubbornness of proving Houston into especially just Texas, but there's the rest of the country and the world too. So I appreciate the good fight you're fighting.
I think you're starting to see, I'm sorry to talk right over you, but okay. This is, you're kind of, not kind of, you may not remember this, but the cake is kind of somewhat coming out of the oven when it comes to Houston. Mm-hmm. And you were the moderator of a panel right before the pandemic, over a year ago, right. for Tech Rodeo. And you were talking, I think, Ecliptic Capital, Mike Irwin and Worley had come down, but you were talking to Blair from Mercury and talking about how the coast were really focusing on Houston and have been, but that there was real opportunity. I don't have to tell you something you already know because you've been putting stories out for a lot of these entities, but you're seeing so many things spring up out of our community that is a combination of VC-focused folks that are here as well as, focused on here, as well as founders that are, getting an opportunity that then get matched with the ecosystem and innovation centers in order to help launch. So I think that we're on the upward side of things when it comes to like getting on the map. But I don't think by any stretch that we've even come close to peaking. And that's exciting. And I think that we're going to stumble a little bit as we try to figure out where all these pieces kind of play together. Mm-hmm. But it's a really awesome time to be called the Houstonian.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think what we also learned, especially in this past year, is it is a global conversation. There's no denying that. It's not, you know, Houston versus its Texas towns. It's Houston versus everyone in a lot of different ways, but it's also a collaborative environment, right? How do we get Houston to that table of national and international innovation conversations? So either way, a topic of that conversation always comes down to talent and where the talent is, where they want to be. And obviously Houston has been ranked as a place that's desirable for people to live, and affordability is in that equation as well. So I just wonder, how has talent acquisition been for Umbridge? Obviously a growing company, and you've mentioned your workforce is pretty much all located in Houston. So how has that been? I know that's something I hear from startup founders as being a challenge.
No, it's spot on. And I love that you brought it up. It's a highlight of a bunch of things. One, the short answer to your question is competitive, and which is awesome. It's even hard for somebody to hear, you know, somebody that's running a company say that, but it's awesome for the town. I mean, it's long overdue. But just look at, go, anyone listening to this, go research Innovation Map, Natalie Harms, and look at all of her last stories just in the last few weeks, and see all of the, from, you know, Cart.com to Rebellion Photonics, who's a neighbor. We're in the same building, by the way. Back to Robert a bit, but he's awesome. You see all of these great companies that are not just bootstrapping. They're raising some significant, look at Hello Alice. I mean, what, you know, those girls are doing and that team is doing is awesome, but it's also making the landscape from a talent perspective very competitive, which is interesting and somewhat self-serving to Umbridge, what I'm about to say, because it was hard enough for a lot of the industrial enterprise to attract the talent, especially the up and coming talent, before all of these startups were, you know, infused with capital to go build their own teams. And it's gotten even harder for those larger, you know, more traditional enterprise. I think that on any sales team, go-to-market team, you have an equal, as you're trying to talk to new and prospective clients on the front side, enterprise service companies like ours, and just companies in general, are also having to build a strategy on the delivery side from a talent perspective. What are you doing to attract and maintain and a pipeline of candidates, much like the front side of a go-to-market team is doing? Because that's where it's a full-time thing now, not courting, but maintaining and thinking from your strategy as to how you're going to attract the talent that you have. It's a shameless plug pivot right here, but we only grew during the pandemic through a program we had put into place from day one. So we're services based, and anyone will tell you that knows me on our team, I'm very focused on what's our cash flow situation. You know, we're small, we're competing thankfully in some big pools. And so sometimes services, net payment periods are a little long. And so how do you manage and build the teams you need to and not get crushed in a cash flow? And so one of the things that we were able to do is tap into some really awesome ecosystems here in Houston on the bootcamp side of things. You got Digital Crafts, you got Flatiron, and some others that are putting out some really awesome talent, especially on the developer side of things for those two. But then, you know, you've got others on the design side, and we have an apprentice program that we've been running for the last year. But we grew during the pandemic because you had an influx of people coming out of those coding academies needing opportunities to onboard, whether they were people coming out of college going to get a technical specialty, or a lot of folks that were pivoting from a company that maybe they had gotten let go of. And there is, you know, we implemented and hired, you know, close to 18 or 19 different people over the course of 12 months through a program that allowed us to onboard folks and give folks a shot while we got a chance to kind of test and measure one another out from a culture perspective, as well as from a capability perspective. You know, one of the things that we've, I don't want to say given away, but that we've shared with clients as well in SCGTS, which is the tubular division of Sumitomo as an example, is how to grow or implement potentially a similar type program to get in front of a lot of the talent shortages or talent drives that some of the enterprise has. Because back to my earlier point and before this diatribe, it's only going to get tougher from a talent perspective as Houston starts to grow from an ecosystem, a startup place, and an innovation place. So what's great for the innovation and you know, digital side of things from a foundry standpoint makes it challenging though as well from a talent side. So it's a yin and a yang to a certain perspective, but in a great, great way.
Those are all great points, especially the ecosystem of you know, training that's developed over the past few years. It's really making a difference. And I think one of the unique challenges of the innovation ecosystem in Houston is attracting, and startups in general, attracting talent from the bigger companies, namely the oil and gas companies. And I feel like there's been a culture shift too, where in Houston, the goal would be to get one of those corporate jobs as you graduate college, and on the coasts, the covetable positions are with the startups, right? And so in Houston, we're kind of seeing a change in that mindset, maybe that might help make it a little easier to attract against compared to those bigger companies. Is that something you've seen change, or are we still fighting that fight?
I think that teammates, colleagues want to, you know, compensation is a big thing, but culture is something that is a big driver. Autonomy is also something that I'm seeing bubble up into conversations. It's hard to put that in a particular paycheck or necessarily deposit, but having some autonomy in the way in which you're working and how you're working is a big, big value driver to folks coming out of school or wanting to come on board. But also they ask, and you know, we're being interviewed just as much as we're interviewing folks as we're seeking the talent. What does your company stand for? What's the motto? What's the passion? And then what's your work balance? What's your on-prem versus remote? And you know, that's a big, big thing for folks out there that are, you know, at the top of the class when it comes to deciding, you know, where they're going to go for the next thing or for their next particular career move. And yes, as I said earlier, I think that the enterprise was strapped and challenged to attract the, you know, cutting edge up and coming folks that wanted to go work at Enter Big Logo here on the tech side, that maybe weren't so much driven by a 401k or what the long-term retirement plan is. What does your company stand for? And what's the values behind it? It's been interesting as the old person in the company to kind of see that, but also challenging in a great way to kind of stay on top of things. And, you know, umbrage means a lot of things to us, and we ask clients to take umbrage with status quo, but you know, we challenge ourselves and challenge our teammates, take umbrage with umbrage. What could we be doing that's a little bit better from a culture perspective, from a work-life perspective, from a offering perspective?
Yeah, well, you know, there's talent, there's, you know, VC dollars, there's access to accelerators. These are all a part of the challenge that Houston faces as a burgeoning innovation ecosystem. What do you see as kind of the biggest void that Houston still has compared to some other major innovation ecosystems that you think is probably priority number one for developing and working out
I think we're getting there. I think we have it. I think it's not that we don't have what I'm about to say. It's just, it hasn't had a chance to really bloom just yet. But folks in the arena, I feel like there's been a lot of really great unnamed individuals that kind of kicked things off a while ago that maybe don't know. I mean, people, I'll say some names here that are throwbacks, like a guy named Russ Capper, who many people may not know, but he was doing business makers and energy makers long before there was any kind of ecosystem, you know, and you know, people like Kurt Coburn that started Surge Shack and JR at Station Houston with, you know, with Grace. And, you know, there's been a lot of folks that are setting up the foundations for folks to come in. And I think getting more and more folks down into the dirt from these founders, people like Moji at Sambita Factory with his sister and what they're doing and driving things and, you know, not so much telling folks what to do, but getting down and making, you know, mistakes and learning from things as we start to cross iron with iron and sharpen one another from a company perspective. You know, you look at Austin, who has, you know, some great ecosystems in helping get some companies kind of not just started, but really, really launched. I think all of those little ingredients are starting to bubble up here for it to be a really hot point for things to kind of spark off. Right now, we're pretty siloed. If that was the not negative, but if that was the critique, understandably so. And I think that there's been a lot of folks on the periphery wanting to put things in, but we needed doers, and we're seeing a lot of the doers kind of come out, and more, you know, emphasis and light we can shine on that. I think the more attractive Houston will be just as a place where you can start a company and you can grow a company and you can sustain a company, even from the outside. And I think the more and more we give that up and get those folks down in there, you know, the better it'll be. We are known for our rodeo. You know, I know we had the tech rodeo, but we get the, you know, Houston Livestock Show and rodeo. The more people we can get up out of the stands and get down into that red dirt that's on the field when the rodeo comes every February, March, you know, participating, the better. Even though some of us, yes, are competing against one another down there, for the betterment of the whole, it is good to see a lot of players that are getting on that bull and riding.
That's a great metaphor. And I think so much of Houston is defined by its people. I think a lot of times when I ask people, you know, what's so special to them about Houston, it's the people is their answer. So I appreciate the name dropping and the recognition of that, because it is what, you know, sets us apart. And I like this idea of it's competitive, but it's collaborative at the same time. And it needs to be that way to really grow. So that's really great. I want to shift toward a little bit more future thinking in both terms of Houston, but also Umbridge. You know, what are you focusing on this year and maybe even in the next few years to come?
Yeah, it's a good question. When I talk to folks and I steal a line from a pastor friend of mine when talking about churches, but when I'm talking to folks coming on board, I'm like, you know, there's no perfect company. And if you find the perfect company, don't join it, because you'll probably mess it up. And I say that because we're not a perfect company. And we are still trying to find our, you know, adolescence stage and, you know, how are we gelling together, especially in a challenge time starting right before COVID. And then what's really allowed us to an opportunity to grow and strengthen and galvanize has been, you know, how fast we've grown because of the work that we were, you know, able to procure during this time. And we have a cross-craft mentality. And much like Houston, that sometimes gets a little focused on its own stuff, you know, design sometimes can just get focused there. Dev can sometimes get focused, and, you know, prod and ops, you know, and we're not different than a lot of enterprise that are trying to find ways to collaborate, again, especially in a remote. And so why I say that is because myself and one of the other founders, Ronak Patel, were having conversations today just about how do we allow ourselves to scale, much like we want the products we work on for the clients to scale, in a way that is both flourishing for the individual, as well as hopefully beneficial, obviously, to Umbridge. To answer your question a little bit more specifically as far as what we're working on, a few years ago, you saw a lot of big shifting from getting enterprise to stop doing your solutions in Excel. And you saw a lot of people that were managing their flows, their, you know, all their different things that were running. There wasn't a solution that was given to them, so they just used Excel. And Excel is a great product, but it's probably not meant to run your dashboards on various things. Similarly, when you get your product and your product backlog up and running, there's a lot of that running on Excel as well, which is fine. There's a lot of really good use of that. We have found a company. We don't push product. We're not a product company. We're agnostic, but we do like what we like. We've done a partnership with a company called Product Board that's a small startup in helping folks manage backlog. And how do you incorporate feedback? How do you go from the epics, features, user stories, and acceptance criteria to where a developer knows exactly what to do? And then how do you keep the forest from the trees? And we're excited to continue working with them. It's a tool we use with the clients. It's a tool we use through no remuneration back to Umbridge through Product Board, but we just believe in it. And so I'm excited for that partnership to further mature, to see where it can go. Only because to quote them, they hadn't seen anyone like what we're doing with their particular product being implemented kind of on the enterprise. And, you know, we're big believers in educating folks as we go. And you're seeing even an old school shift from some of the more Excel driven and, you know, antiquated ways in which backlog is being run, to pass that along and share some of the experiences we've had in how do you set up a growing backlog that's an ever living thing. And let us show you kind of one product that can be a tool in your toolbox. It ain't the end all solution, but it's definitely a arrow you can pull out of the quiver and, you know, use efficiently and effectively.
Do you foresee, based on our conversations, I think I can guess the answer, but do you foresee a growth in your company's team? Are you fundraising anytime soon? What other benchmarks do you have on the horizon?
Yeah, great question. There's not an active fundraising going on. And, you know, we're always looking for, always balancing that line between, you know, work to team to work. And that's something that, going back to my days when, you know, another company was acquired by a large consultancy and seeing them do the dance. I'm excited to see as we roll through this quarter and into the fourth, as we're actually looking towards 2022 right now on not where can we go, but how do we industrialize, as we say, what it is we're doing. We're very, very blessed to be okay in the accounts book, if you will. And we've been very, very good stewards with the money given to us. And so I'm excited to see if we can't take that out for a little bit of a ride now that we have some powder to go put and weaponize with what we've done. Now, we're services, so we didn't have a product we could pull out and show. We spent the last 18 months, if you will, incubating the use cases, the solutions that we've deployed our team to leverage our process and utilize a methodology for the products we've built. We've been sitting back, COVID, but sitting back because we've been really trying to make sure that we were delivering what it was we said we could do and not just building up stories that nobody, quite frankly, wanted to hear, but also that weren't really deliverable, if you will, from a case study perspective. So I'm excited about some of the pieces that we're working on to share the stories that we're building with the clients we're building it. It's been very, very rare, and I have an experience in the last two companies, to have services-based entities. We're normally a white label and coming in and doing stuff, and then no one wants anyone to know that was done. There's been a shift happening. It's hard to be able to talk about some of the work
it's even harder when you get a client to talk about it with you. And so we have a few of those that we're working with. You've seen some on the website, from CPAP to Sumitomo and SCGTS and Colbor. There's some others coming that we're excited to kind of share the pains of what it was like to get to the solution, to show there is kind of a light at the end of the tunnel for those that may be going through the same thing. We're at 48 FTEs. You know, we'll probably get 10 more by the end of the year, depending upon a couple of projects that we're working. And that's a pretty healthy number. That if we sustained and stayed that for a while, that would be awesome, because we are continuing to galvanize and as I said, strengthen ourselves as much as we're trying to strengthen and galvanize the products that this particular team has been hired to go build. So it's a push pull with us to get the work and then deliver on the work, but it's not just a tagline or a motto on the site of our own, our decks of we deliver. We really started with the mission of do what you said you're going to do, and they'll probably get some more work, deliver. And that's a big, big, again, not just motto, but actual passion and mission for what we're doing.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like you're on a good path for that. And, you know, at the end of the day, in a service oriented company, your product is your people and your portfolio. So those sound like they are right in line with where you need them to be. So I appreciate your time today and talking through both what Umbridge is doing and the presence of Houston in your priorities. Again, love to see it. So thanks so much.
Thank you very, very much. I know we went long, and I apologize if you were up against it, but thank you for what you're doing for Houston. You've been a Pied Piper to the Houston light that you've been shining. And it's great to kind of see it all kind of starting to come together on a personal basis for you, but also as a proud Houstonian. So yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. Just two proud Houstonians talking about Houston innovation. This could have been a much longer conversation, honestly. So I appreciate
part
that.
Part two. I mean, twist my arm to come talking about Houston and all this stuff. I haven't even begun to start to list all the other folks that are out there, because there's a lot, I think the VC world should be named as well, because there's a lot of Houston-based VCs that are putting money where mouth is, both from a raise perspective and a deployment perspective.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much again. It's a joy to talk to you about this, and can't wait to see where you go and what Umbridge is able to accomplish in these next few years. So appreciate it.
Yep. Y'all have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.